Okay, so we're on the second day of our holiday with Tara. Yeah, nice vacation, isn't it? Yeah, it's better than going on vacation even with your friends and relatives. Yeah, Tara's very pleasant to be with. She doesn't complain. Yeah, she doesn't use harsh words. She's very cooperative. Yeah, so you should enjoy your vacation with Tara while you can. Okay, the question came up yesterday about initiation and if you need initiation to do the Tara practice. So initiation is it's a ceremony that is actually a guided meditation where the meditation master leads you in a series of thoughts and feelings and, you know, meditation to help you make that connection with a manifestation of the Buddha. So the initiations, there's two things. One is called the permission or the jainang, and the other is the actual initiation or wong in Tibetan. And the wong, the actual initiation, is done so that when you do the meditation, you can do the self-generation. In other words, you can dissolve yourself into emptiness and reappear in the form of the deity. Okay. However, when you just do the front generation, that is when you keep the deity in front, like we're doing in the Tara practice, you don't need to receive the initiation to do that. Now, it's good if you do, but it's not necessary. If you have the jainam, it's very good, but also it's not necessary, okay? Because the deity is still out in front of you. You're receiving the blessings from imagining that Buddha in the space before you. Okay, so don't worry about not having the initiation if you don't have it, because at least with the practice that we're doing here, you don't need it. In other practices, if you are to visualize yourself as the deity, then before doing those, you definitely need the initiation. Okay, then we will do some meditation, but this question caught my mind as I was sitting down, and I thought I'd answer it. So this person says, I'm not able to convince myself to follow the Bodhisattva path. Could you please help me understand why I should do that rather than to be an arhat? Okay, and strive for liberation and arhatship. Okay. So, I must say that whether a person works to become an arhat is somebody who has eliminated the afflicted obscurations and is liberated from samsara. They no longer take rebirth because they've generated the wisdom that can eliminate the ignorance. Okay, an arhat has wonderful attainments. I mean, being free of cyclic existence, never getting angry again, never having attachment again. Wonderful attainment. You know, somebody who has attained that, we should definitely bow to, because they're certainly higher, more highly realized than we are, aren't we? Okay. However, there's two levels of attainment. There's the arhat, the attainment of the arhat, and then there's the attainment of the Buddha. Okay? To become an arhat, one has the motivation to be free of cyclic existence, and then you practice, you know, the three higher trainings of ethical conduct, concentration, and wisdom. You eliminate what's called the afflictive obscurations. Those are the mental afflictions. They're seeds and the karma that causes rebirth and cyclic existence. You eliminate that and you attain liberation. To become a Buddha, on the other hand, okay, your motivation is not simply to free yourself from cyclic existence. It's to become a fully enlightened being so that you have the wisdom, compassion, and skill that's necessary in order to lead all other beings out of samsara and lead them to the realization of a Buddha. Okay? So an arhat, while highly realized, doesn't have the ability to lead everybody to enlightenment because an arhat hasn't attained enlightenment. Okay? To attain enlightenment, yeah, in addition to the three higher trainings that you practice as to become an arhat, you first of all generate the bodhicitta, that aspiration for full enlightenment, okay, in order to benefit others. And so that aspiration has great love and great compassion and a great resolve to really take it upon oneself to liberate other beings or to lead other beings to liberation. So that motivation, you can see, is quite a different one. Yeah, because it's not just seeking your own liberation. It's wanting to help everybody. And so that motivation makes one, it changes how one practices. Because then in addition to practicing the three higher trainings, one also practices the six paramitas, okay, of the bodhisattva. Yeah. So these six bodhisattva paramitas are generosity, ethical discipline, or ethical conduct, patience, joyous effort, meditative stabilization, and wisdom. So you practice those six. You also practice the four ways of assembling disciples because you really want to be able to teach others. So you practice generosity. You practice encouraging them on the path. You practice giving teachings. You practice setting a good example by practicing what you preach. Okay? And so by the power of doing those practices, you remove not only the afflictive obscurations that an arhat has also removed, but you also remove the cognitive obscurations, which are very subtle obscurations, like the appearance of true existence, or what's called the dual appearance. You eliminate that. You eliminate the very subtle self-centered thought on the mind. You eliminate the imprints of the afflictions, you know, not just their seeds. And so the attainment of full enlightenment, your mind has eliminated more obscurations. It's a completely purified mind with nothing at all left to purify, nothing at all left to develop. Okay, so that realization of a Buddha is more noble, is considered a higher realization than that of an arhat. And once one becomes an arhat, what you do is different than once you become a Buddha. Okay? Because an arhat, you know, because their intention was to free themselves for cyclic existence, then once they do that, they stay in the meditative stabilization of the wisdom that realizes the nature of reality. And you just stay in that and in your blissful nirvana. Okay? However, when somebody becomes a Buddha, when somebody becomes fully enlightened, you don't just stay in your own meditation, okay? You don't leave your state of meditation on the nature of reality. But because you've practiced so much longer and developed all these other qualities, at the same time as you focus on the nature of reality, you can also make many manifestations, you can manifest many different bodies and forms that go out into the universe to be able to help sentient beings. So a Buddha is constantly engaged in benefiting others. A Buddha benefits others more than a Bodhisattva. A Bodhisattva is a child of the Buddha, is somebody who's going to grow up to be a Buddha. But once you've grown up to be a Buddha and you've eliminated everything to purify, developed everything to enrich your mind with, then automatically, spontaneously, wherever sentient beings have the karma to receive your inspiration, your help, and your guidance, then you are spontaneously able to manifest whatever form is most skillful to be able to benefit them. Okay? So you can see that a Buddha is much more capable of benefiting all living beings than an arhat is. You know, somebody who is an arhat can be of great benefit, but the benefit of a Buddha is much more extensive. Okay, so why should we, you know, what is the advantage of trying, you know, of aiming for the full enlightenment of a Buddha and doing the Bodhisattva path? Well, it's because if you, you know, really have selfless love and compassion for others, then you're going to want to do everything that you can to benefit them. So even though the Bodhisattva path may be more difficult and it may take longer, you're completely willing to do that by the power of your compassion for sentient beings. Okay. When I think of that compassion, I find it very moving, very inspiring, you know, to think of just willing to practice for three countless great eons because the power of your love and compassion for others is so strong, you know, that you're willing to do anything you possibly can to be a benefit to them. And when I think of the power of that mind, of that bodhicitta mind, to me it's like so inspiring that, okay, let's go for it. You know, sure, an arhat's realization is wonderful, but, you know, compared to how noble the bodhicitta is, wow, you know, I wanna go for full enlightenment to be able to do, you know, what the Buddha himself has done, what Tara is doing, what Kuan Yin is doing. Okay? Now, some people, perhaps they don't feel inspired by the Bodhisattva path. Okay? Then work for arhatship. Definitely it's worthwhile. You know, go for it. Okay? But if you have, you know, if the idea of working for all sentient beings, you know, because of the power of your completely purified mind, if you find that something really inspiring, then practice the Bodhisattva path. Okay? Now, you know, the question comes in this, well, why should I care about others? You know, it's like, well, you know, the Buddha told us we all have to be self-reliant. We all have to practice the path on our own. Nobody else can do it for us. That's completely true. Yeah. Well, why should we, you know, care about others? Well, even arhats, you know, not even, but arhats definitely care about others. You know, before they go into their own parinirvana, they're teaching the Dharma. Okay? So arhats have love and compassion. It's not the great love and compassion, but they do try and help others. Why? Because, you know, they see that others are suffering. Yeah. On the Bodhisattva path, we recognize not only that others are suffering, but that others have been incredibly kind to us. Okay? And so we meditate quite a bit on the kindness of others and how linked we are to other living beings. Okay? So even on the ordinary level, as human beings, we're so dependent on the kindness of others. Yeah? We're dependent on our parents who gave us this rebirth so that we can practice the Dharma. We're dependent on our teachers who teach us. You know, we're dependent on the people who grow our food. If you eat meat, you're dependent on somebody who's offering their body to you to eat. Do you offer your body to somebody else to eat? No, but you're happy to eat somebody else's body. So, you know, we're so dependent on other living beings. Now, for everything, and even to practice the Dharma, we're dependent on other living beings. Now, like I was saying in the earlier talks, somebody designed this building. So many people built it. You know, people grew our food. So, and people right now are preparing our lunch. Look at the booklets that you all received. You know, you have this nice folder. You have the Tara Sadhana. You have a picture of Tara. Where did these come from? They came from the efforts of other sentient beings, didn't they? You know, and we just kind of show up and there it all is for us to use. But do we ever think of how many people's effort went into making those? Yeah, I was the editor of the Pearl of Wisdom book. If you want to hear about how much effort I put in, I could tell you how many problems there were along the way, how much time it took, how many frustrations that I had to go through. Yeah, and then there was the computer, you know, that helped us put it together. You know, when you think about it, there's so many people involved in our having food and clothing and building to live in, Dharma materials, you know, even to practice the Dharma. I mean, all the people who work so hard to organize this series of teachings here in Singapore. You know, think of the pilot and the flight attendants on the flight that I took over here. We're dependent on their kindness. Okay? So when you think about it, we're so intricately related with so many other living beings that how can we just aim for our own liberation and say, I'm out of samsara, good luck everybody. You know? I mean, when we really think of how much kindness we've received and that our ability to practice the Dharma is due to other living beings' kindness, then how can we practice the path just for our own benefit, just to attain our own liberation? You know, it doesn't seem right, does it? Yeah, because what about if other people said to us, well, you know, sure, you want to have a Dharma teaching? Go organize it yourself. You want to have a prayer book? Go print it yourself. You want to have a building to practice in? Go build it yourself. You know? Nobody said that to us. All these sentient beings work so hard. So can we turn our back and say, you want liberation? Go do it yourself? Yeah, that's not right to do. Yeah? So, although we can't crawl inside somebody's mind and make them liberated, we can certainly remove our obstacles to being able to teach them. Okay? We can remove our obstacles so that we can then manifest in whatever form is skillful to be able to really benefit anybody at any particular moment. So, isn't this, you know, the right thing to do? And, you know, we talk so much about being filial and feeling gratitude to our parents for everything they've done. Well, when we think about it, all sentient beings have been our parents. Now, maybe not this lifetime, but we've been reborn in cyclic existence from beginningless time. So there's plenty of times, you know, when we were all each other's parents. Yeah, we haven't always been born who we are now. We've had all different sorts of karmic relationships in the past. So everybody's been our parents in previous lives. Okay? Even George Bush, even Osama bin Laden, they've been our kind mother and taken care of us with love in a previous life. Okay? Because remember, we've been cycling in cyclic existence from beginningless time. There's plenty of time for them to have been our mother. Of course, they weren't George Bush and Osama bin Laden then. Thank goodness. Okay. But they were in the continuity of consciousness that eventually, you know, became those other beings. And who knows, in a future life, maybe they'll be our kind mother again. Yeah, once they experience they burn off the results of the horrible karma they're creating now. Okay. So, you know, when we look at it this way, if we should be filial and kind and appreciate our present life's parents, then what about our previous life's parents? And what about our future life's parents? And if all sentient beings have been our parents and been kind to us, don't we have, you know, some reason to repay that kindness? No, and not just walk out on them and say, okay, I'm getting enlightenment. Good luck, Mom and Dad. Yeah. No, we want to come back and help them. Hmm? Yeah? Okay. Like, you know, for example, in my own personal case, my parents aren't Buddhist. My parents have no interest in Buddhism. In fact, they aren't even interested in any religion. And, you know, even I try and talk about the Dharma, they're not very interested. They don't even read my books. Yeah? You'd think that at least you'd read your own daughter's books, but no, you know. And I think my mother read part of one time and, you know, about the disadvantages of attachment. She thought it was very peculiar and she stopped reading. Okay? So here I am, my own parents, in this very lifetime. It's really hard for me to benefit them through the Dharma. You know, even to teach them about karma, you know, and how to create merit. You know, I can't even do that. So when I come and I teach here, I look at all of you and I say, well, you're my parents. Yeah. My own parents won't come to, of this life, won't come to listen to me teach. But all you who have been my parents in previous life come. So now I have the opportunity to repay your kindness by sharing the Dharma with you. Okay. And that's because this lifetime, you know, your minds are more receptive. Maybe in a previous lifetime when you were my parents, you weren't interested in the Dharma like my present life's parents aren't. Okay. But then something changed. Yeah. Now you have more good karma. So now you're interested. I can repay your kindness. So I'm hoping that in future lives, my present life's parents will be reborn, you know, with more positive potential, whereby they're interested in the Dharma. And hopefully, if I can keep myself out of the hell realms and, you know, be able to benefit sentient beings, then in a future life, I'll be able to share the Dharma with them.